I just wanted to start by thanking the organisers for inviting me and organising the conference. So actually, quite interestingly, I think this should have some links to the talk this morning. So I'll be talking about foil theories, but also quite a bit about branching. I'll be approaching it from more of an operationalist point of view as opposed to the kind of consistent history, so it might be interesting to see if they're linked and in what way. So the first part of this talk will be slightly more speculative and kind of not fully fleshed out ideas. And then in the second part, I'll be presenting some more results. And so the way I think I've tried to organize this is that I'll keep it not too technical and not too long. That way, if people are interested in different parts, we can then go in more depth in the discussion, or you can ask me questions about it later. Okay. So I want to start here just with some definitions. So the first definition I want to talk about is, what do I mean by an implicit observer? So these are the postulates of quantum theory. Okay, we see they tell us what pure states are, what the dynamical evolution is. And here in red, I've highlighted two postulates, to do with measurement. Okay, so postulate number three here tells us what measurement outcomes associated to, and probability. Postulate number four is a Born rule. Okay, and so kind of latent within these postulates, there's this notion of an observer or an agent. Okay, it's not made explicit here, but there's an idea that when a measurement is performed, it's performed by an observer. Okay, and maybe relative frequencies are written down in the lab book by an agent, forget the probabilities. I think also the implicit, maybe agent, also enters in preparations. So in the operational approach, you admit the possibility of preparing mixtures. Well, prepare state A with probability P1, state B with probability 1 minus P1. Okay, and in there, I think there's also an implicit agent. Okay, someone is carrying out these preparations. Okay, so when I'm talking about implicit observer agent, just think as implicit in the measurement postulates or the fact that preparations are made. Okay, but also I'm also going to be discussing this notion of an explicit observer. And here I think the paradigm case is just a Wigner's friend type experiment, okay? And this is also presented like Frauschiger-Renner paper. Okay, and all I mean is we've assigned a quantum state to the observer. Can the observer in the measurement interaction will interact with the measuring device, which is also described by a quantum state. Okay, so just think kind of Wigner's friend. Okay, so in the title you saw I said quantum theory and beyond. So I'm not going to be talking about all possible GPTs, to be restricting to a specific family. There's a family of theories which share some postulates in common with quantum theory, such as the pure states, but where the measurement postulates change. Okay, so why is it interesting to consider these theories when talking about implicit and explicit observers? Because here, as you see, the kind of notion of an implicit observer will change, because I've changed the measurement postulates, okay? But in a certain respect, the explicit observer, in the sense you can assign a pure quantum state to him or her, will be the same. So this will allow us a bit to probe the kind of compatibility between the two, okay? So I'm going to be arguing that in quantum theory, they're compatible, okay? And then the question I want to ask is, well, if I change the definition of implicit observer, we keep this compatibility. Okay, so these are the theories. Okay, to make it a bit more precise, I'm going to be considering universal theories. Okay, what I mean by this is a theory is universal when all the actions that where an agent is implicitly present, a preparation or a measurement, for instance, can be modeled with the agent described explicitly as a non-classical system. That's a universal theory. Okay. Good. So what I thought maybe I'd expand a bit on the kind of philosophical notions behind this, okay? So this might not be something everybody wants from a theory. So obviously, it makes a bit more precise what I mean by compatibility between implicit and explicit observers. Every implicit action, I can write it down just as quantum states interacting, for instance. Okay, there's also this kind of reductionist idea. So we say, quantum theory describes atoms, measuring devices, and, observers are made of atoms, so I want to be able to assign them a quantum state, okay? So you need to be a bit, I think there's a strong reductionist idea in here. And more fundamentally, I think there's a realist one. So if you're an operationalist, really, all you have are kind of preparations and measurements and probabilities of outcomes given preparations. And a system is just kind of a useful abstraction, which makes it a bit easier to talk about these things. And only when you say a system should be more than what's an input and output, but describe physical systems, can you then want to start describing, why should a human, be described by systems if all it is wires, okay? But also, I think, fundamentally, this kind of realist notion. And in the specific case of quantum theory, I think this is the fact there exists many world interpretations of quantum theory. It's kind of what we mean by the facts of universal theory. There's this interpretation where everything's just quantum systems interacting, okay? So I don't think it commits, I'm not saying it commits us to believing in this interpretation, but maybe, you know, are there other theories with the many worlds interpretation? Might be a valid question if you're asking, are there other universal theories? Good. Okay, so the aims of this talk is I'm going to discuss how the observer comes into play in quantum theory, this explicit and implicit observer, and I want to see which properties of quantum theory allow for universality. Okay, here I'm talking about the types of properties we talk about in GPTs, so properties which, you know, apply to other theories.
So please remind us that universality is the fact that the implicit can be modeled explicitly, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly. Every possible preparation can be modeled explicitly. Every possible measurement, you can write out a kind of many worlds branching for. I'll be more specific afterwards, yeah. Okay, so I'll ask the question, does changing the measurement postulates, i.e. the implicit observer, affect this kind of peaceful coexistence with explicit definitions? This will allow us to kind of ask, is universality a generic feature, you know, of the quantum dynamical structure? You know, so any theory with the same pure states and dynamics will be universal, or is it really unique to the quantum measurement postulates? So it's kind of this specific interplay between the measurement postulates and the dynamical ones, which allows for universality. That's what I'm going to be arguing for, okay? So maybe you can see that universality seems a kind of typically quantum feature, and it's very hard to get in general Boyle theories. Okay, so the structure of the talk is, I'm going to begin with an example of the measurement process. I think this is the one we're most used to, okay, where you're having this friend doing a measurement, and you can write it down explicitly. And here I'm just going to give some intuition as to why it might be hard if we change the measurement postulates to do this explicitly. Then I'm going to talk about explicit and implicit observers in the preparation process. I'm going to argue that purification is, you know, modulo some assumptions more or less equivalent to universality for preparation. Then I'm going to show that I'm going to introduce these theories of alternative measurement postulates and claim they violate purification. After that, I'll conclude with some thoughts on GPTs and maybe some suggestions for discussion. Okay. Okay, so let's look at the measurement process. So here above, I've just written it how you do it standardly. So you have your state psi, okay? You want to measure according to an orthonormal basis. Here, okay, so you express it in that basis, and the probability of obtaining I given psi is given by the amplitude squared, okay? This is the implicit observer. I've not made any mention of an observer here, okay? Even though the idea in your mind is there's someone doing this. Okay, but let's say I want to do it explicitly. So I assign a quantum state to the observer. Here I haven't, you know, included the measurement apparatus. I've just got the observer and the state psi, and then what is a measurement process physically? It's some interaction between agent and state, okay? And so this then just entangles. We have in this way, okay? So it's a nice branching. Here we see the probability of this seeing I occurring is the same as the probability of I occurring above. Okay, so this I think is quite well known. I just want to make facts. So this kind of evolution here, this branching, seems to be purely dynamical. It's just a statement about how systems compose and entangle. But it's important to see that the fact that outcomes are associated to eigenvectors makes it quite easy to read off each branch corresponding to a measurement outcome, okay? It's also something about the fact that outcomes correspond to these eigenvectors, which allows us to also interpret branches in this manner. Okay, good. So let's see. Okay, now I want to see for a theory slightly different to quantum theory if I can still maintain this type of interpretation. The basic thing I can do up here is say the probability of obtaining an outcome is a function still of a single coefficient, f of alpha I. We've got the same dynamical structure, so I can still write this down. And here it's quite easy to kind of interpret it in the same manner. Outcomes are still correspond to these basis elements. Okay, so the fact they're still associated to eigenvectors makes the dynamical branching interpretation quite easy. Okay, I don't need to give you anything else. I just give you this state, and you see quite easily, okay, this is a measurement that's carried out. These are the outcomes. Okay, but as was mentioned earlier in the previous talk, if you change just the Born rule in this manner, you run into difficulties, okay? Typically, you'd have signaling, for instance, and things like this, okay? So these are generally seen as not good modifications. So if we want to change how the implicit observer enters into quantum theory, We have to do more than just change the Born rule. We have to change the fact that outcomes associated to these bases. Okay, so now the probability of an outcome occurring is just some general function of all the coefficients, or just of the state, okay? Okay, so we need to modify more than just the Born rule, we need to modify the measurement structure, quantum theory. Okay, and now I do this, the probability of an outcome is this general function, and here this, trying to read off, you know, how this corresponds to a measurement, how I can read off the measurement from the branching. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it seems definitely less obvious. Like, if it's a function of all the coefficients, like, this interpretation seems harder. Okay. Good. So the kind of key point I wanted to take away from this section is that changing the measurements, i.e. the implicit observer, makes this explicit modeling of the measurement process challenging. I haven't shown you it's impossible, it just seems harder or not as obvious as in the quantum case. Does that make sense? Okay, so now we can look a bit more at preparation procedures. Okay, so I'd say in GPTs generally, we have these kind of observers or agents, we have systems, and we also have classical probability theory. Okay, so we have this kind of system-system interaction, okay, which is how quantum systems interact. We have observer-system interaction, so these are measurements where probabilities come out, states collapse, things like this. And we also have what I call classical probability theory system interaction, okay, where you can prepare mixtures. Okay, and so the claim I'm making here is the observer enters implicitly also in this part here, okay? So in a universal theory, we don't want to have to resort to using classical probability theory. We want to, you know, your coin or your random number generator is also made of atoms, okay? So it's also a quantum state, okay? So you want to be able to describe preparations using just quantum states. Okay. So this also, for instance, is in the Frauschiger-Renner paper. A key part of it is there's this coin, okay? With, I mean, different weights, but... Okay, so implicitly, if, you know, if I don't treat the observer explicitly, I can just write this down straight away, as we know. 50-50 mixture of 0 and 1. Okay, and how do I do it explicitly? So my coin is assigned a quantum state, the system, obviously, and then the friend. So you prepare the coin in this equally weighted superposition, and it entangles. Okay? So here we can prepare, we can describe this preparation purely dynamically. We have this also easy to read branching structure, once again, a bit like in the measurement. Okay. But now let's, so yeah, that's the problem. Branching seems quite specific to quantum theory. So I'm going to study this in a bit of a more general perspective, see what's going on. So first to observe, well, everything's a quantum system, so it's universal. Mixed states are generated using entanglement in this approach. And secondly, all mixed states can be generated in this manner. Okay, so in quantum theory, any mixed state you write, I can have the same dynamical evolution. Okay, so this seems tied into a quite common postulate in GPTs or APTs, which is the idea of purification, okay? Which just tells you that every mixed state is the reduced state of a global pure state, okay? A theory where this is true obeys purification. Now, this is actually a slightly weaker statement than the standard one, which says something about equivalence up to unitary transformation on the discarded system, okay? But when I talk about purification, I just mean this. Okay, so it seems that for preparation universality, there's this link to purification, okay? As a property. Okay. So I just have to be clear, okay. So if I say all mixed states have to be prepared using entanglement and the theory is universal, this implies purification. Depending on your point of view, big assumption or small assumption is all mixed states have to be generated using entanglement, okay? So I think this is quite natural if you just use the analogy to quantum theory. Here it's definitely prepared using entanglement. This is how you write things down. So it's a natural assumption, but it's not necessary. Okay, so in a universal theory, you can prepare mixed states without entanglement, okay? Because, I mean, a mixed state, for instance, the 50-50 mixture, I can just prepare a pure, you know, pure states like this and carry out single measurements. This is probably what you do in the lab, okay, right? You prepare n over 2 pure states, n over 2 one, 0 states, n over 2 1 states, suitably mixed up, and it'll look like a mixed state, okay? And this, you can obtain it. For instance, what you do, you start off with your target state n zeros, and then, for instance, a very long random bit string, like this. You just do a C naught on all of them, and then you obtain your mixed state, okay? So I personally find this way of preparing mixed states doesn't look very nice. You need a very big, you know, amount of randomness at the start, and there's issues with it, okay? There's interesting discussion on this blog here by Matus Alojo, not sure how to pronounce his name, but arguing that you would actually want entanglement to prepare mixed states, okay? So maybe this, if people are interested, we can talk about later. But here I'm gonna assume that we want to make preparations with entanglement, okay? So we're saying, okay, universality, no classical systems, everything's quantum. We prepare mixed states with entanglement, okay? This implies purification. Because universality, remember, says every possible action implicitly doable must be explicitly doable. So every possible mixed state you can write down, you must be able to also write it as the... with an entanglement-based preparation and tracing out. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Entanglement is still defined in the usual way.
Yeah, here, because I'm just looking at GPTs with the same pure states, I'm just defining it in this way.
So is this statement related to this kind of theory where you just modify the Born rule or just general?
So far, I'm only looking at the ones with modified Born rules. Okay, I need
so
to think...
I was wondering whether this kind of result was...
I think it might be. I haven't thought about it in depth. But yeah, maybe we can discuss it. And to me, it seems quite natural, but I haven't thought about it in general terms.
Something that's troubling me about the connection with purification. Mm. So starting with the case of measurements.
Yeah.
If I had wanted not a Neumark dilation strictly, but just a dilation where the initial state of the ancilla didn't have to be pure. Mm-hmm. So certain POVMs could be measured just by dilating with some mixed state on the ancilla.
Yeah.
And then I could say, yes, I've now done an explicit model of the measurement device, even though, you know, I still have this mixed state in the description.
Yeah.
But you're sort of presuming that my dilation has to involve pure states, and it's the same with the measurements.
Yeah.
Like I could have imagined saying, I have this coin flipping mechanism, but who's to say that its initial state has to be a pure state? But you have assumed it's a pure state. So I see that there's a potential for a wedge to be driven between this universality and purification by just allowing some mixed states as the initial states.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm just curious how.
So I think. That's definitely true. Here I've kind of assumed that we're describing everything with pure states. I guess one motivation is in the way I consider theories, which is they're axiomatized in this way, the kind of explicit part is just for pure states. So it comes from this perspective. But yeah, from another, like, more general GPT perspective, it seems less natural. So yeah, I think that would be the way. So it comes from this specific point of view.
Sort of universality for these types of theories.
Yeah, exactly. And with this division I've given between, you know, the kind of the pure states and then the measurement postulates, and some people might prefer to just, you know, start with mixed states and things like this. So yeah, it comes from here. Okay. So then the question becomes, you know, do alternative theories obey purification? Again, purification is a postulate which applies to kind of more general theories. Okay. And here the key point is making preparations using entanglement. Okay, so here once again, I'm not going to go into too much detail, just give an overview and some intuition about what's happening. Okay. So I've kind of divided the postulates into two sets, the one pertaining to measurement, which is sometimes called the probabilistic structure, and the ones to do with pure states, their dynamics, and composition. Okay, so here, these two postulates, I'm just going to express them as a single one, which will allow us to generalize. So really, all we need to specify, instead of saying these are what the measurement outcomes are and these are probabilities, I just say the set of all outcome probabilities. I can specify them, okay? The set of all outcome probabilities. So this is the case for quantum theory, okay? So I just specify this set. Okay, so all functions of this form, where f is positive semi-definite, are allowed outcome probability functions. Okay? And then just from operational facts, such as for a measurement to occur, the outcome probability is to sum to one. Okay, so you can say any combination of fi, any such combination form a measurement, okay, this implies that the operators f here have to sum to the identity, things like that. Does that make sense? So instead of just saying these are the measurements and these are the outcome probabilities, just say the set of all outcome probability functions specifies, you know, all your measurement structure. And from this, I can recreate the fact that they have to sum to the identity, for instance. Then how do you change the measurement postulates? I just say the set of functions and some other set of functions here, okay? Can here, this allows for the fact that outcomes aren't associated to basis elements anymore. Okay, so these are the postulates for the alternative theories with these different implicit observers. Okay, so the first thing to notice, what happens when you change the measurement postulates? So when I tell you in quantum theory that two ensembles are indistinguishable, okay, so the 50-50 mixture of the plus and minus is indistinguishable from the 50-50 mixture of the 0-1, it just means that if you have access to these two ensembles, you can't tell them apart, given that you have access to the quantum measurements. Okay, that's what it means to be indistinguishable. Okay, and so actually, the density matrices of quantum theory, or the mixed states, okay, they just tell you which ensembles are indistinguishable. Okay, so on the blocks here, you pick any mixed state, and it tells you exactly that the 50-50 of A and B is indistinguishable from the 30-70 of C. D. Okay, this is what a mixed state is, it's just an equivalence class of indistinguishable preparations. Okay, but indistinguishable given your measurements. If you're allowed to do new measurements, then you'll have different sets of equivalence classes, different mixed states. Okay. So first conclusion is mixed states no longer correspond to density matrices. Okay, let's imagine a trivial example. I have a theory where the set of functions here. It's just a single function which gives one for all states, all pure states. Here, all preparations will be indistinguishable. Your state space, your set of mixed states will just be a single point. Okay, alternatively, let's imagine the set F here has direct delta functions on every single pure state. So a single canonical measurement where you can distinguish every state perfectly. Then what you'd obtain is essentially a kind of classical state space. So pure states will be P, C, D, but then you can distinguish all ensembles. There'll be infinite dimensional state space. Those are two extreme examples. So just to rephrase, for instance, the number of parameters needed to specify the mixed states changes, change the measurement postulates, you have different state spaces. So what will happen if you're used to thinking of GPTs? Your state spaces are convex sets. So for the qubit, it's two-sphere embedded, three dimensions. So here will be a two-sphere embedded in some different number of dimensions, okay? It'll be the same surface of pure states, in a sense, but embedded in a different dimensional space. Same manifold, I should say, right? Okay. Okay, so the key point is, when you impose some kind of operational constraints, you're not allowed to have any set. Okay, so obviously the set F of functions will have to map the pure states to 0, 1, because they're probabilities. But we have some other constraints. So in the operational approach, if I have a system and I do a transformation followed by a measurement, this I can group together as a single measurement, okay? Yeah, it's just operationally the case. So it means that if I have a function f which belongs to the set, okay, then f composed with the transformation must also belong to the set, okay? Where composed here means f of u psi. So f dash, okay, so we impose some operational principles, so it's not completely arbitrary sets, okay? Okay, good. So what we then find is that all allowed sets, so these are sets of functions, okay, can be fully classified using representation theory. Okay, so these alternative families I'm talking about, we can actually kind of pinpoint and like label them in some manner. Okay, and these are just the representations acting on the set of mixed states. So what I mean is your qubit, if you want to transform the state with a bit flip, 0 to 1, for instance, okay, you act on it with a 3 by 3 matrix, okay? This is a three-dimensional representation of SU2. In these alternative theories where the state spaces are higher dimensional, it'll be some n-dimensional representation of SUD. Okay, and here what we have is an infinite family of systems, okay? So, okay, something which is quite interesting, just to give you a bit of a feel about what's happening in these alternative systems, is that, as I said, mixed states are equivalence classes of ensembles, okay? So the more ensembles are in your equivalence class, the more compressed it is, okay? So it turns out quantum theory is the most compressed state space. If you compress it any further down, for instance, to a single point, you lose the fact that the pure states are this manifold. Okay, and as I said, the classical one is the one where you've got Dirac delta functions, it's infinite dimensional. So all the alternative theories I'm talking about are somewhere between the quantum and the classical. Okay, so in all the alternatives, you can better distinguish ensembles. So this kind of gives us some kind of hierarchy. The quantum at the bottom, classical at the top. Okay, so far I've just been talking about kind of single systems, but really in GPTs, were at first at least interested in bipartite systems. So, yeah, the fact that you have multiple systems imposes a lot of extra constraints on the sets F of allowed functions, okay? It tells you you have a system A with these functions, system B with these functions, system C with these functions such that they compose, will have severe constraints. You know, so it has to be like a product effects and things like that have to exist. If FA in this set and FB in this set, there has to be some effect up here which corresponds to doing FA and FB, okay, these types of notions. These actually put a lot of extra constraints. Okay, and so yeah, these bipartite systems all violate local tomography, okay, which is a property which just tells you that full state tomography of bipartite systems are possible with joint local measurements. Okay, and they also violate purification, which I linked to this universality before. Okay. Good, yeah, so I won't go into the details of local tomography, and this is the only slightly technical slide, just to give you an intuition about how we show this, and then maybe if you're thinking about other theories, it might be helpful. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so let's say you have a global pure state psi AB, you want to take its reduced state, okay? You know that if I apply a random unitary just on the B side, it should give you the same reduced state, otherwise you can signal. Reduced state for Alice here, I'm saying, okay? So this is by no signaling. So this divides up the global pure states into equivalence classes given by here, okay? These are equivalence classes of global pure states, which must be matched to the same mixed state. Okay, you can kind of parameterize this, okay? And you see that in quantum theory, each equivalence class is mapped to the same reduced state, okay, same local mixed state. But these alternative theories will have a much larger family of mixed states, okay? So there'll be equivalence classes will all be mapped to mixed states, for instance, here, and then another equivalence class to here. But there'll be kind of mixed states in between, which aren't the reduced states of an equivalence class up here. This is just via some parameter counting argument. You need more parameters to parameterize the mixed states than there are of equivalence classes of global pure states. Okay. So this is the only technical detail of the talk. Okay, so the consequences are we have some mixed states which cannot be prepared using entanglement, which aren't the reduced states of some global pure state. So there are some actions of the implicit agent which cannot be modeled explicitly as non-classical systems entangling. Okay, the caveat is you can explicitly model preparations if the agent has large amounts of initial randomness. Okay.
Is this the only condition you used for the...
For the purification?
Yeah, because I was also thinking you could have a measurement on one side and a measurement on the other side being independent. Because the measurements now do not... They're not like in one-to-one correspondence to the countries, right?
Yeah, actually, this is the only condition we used. I didn't think about it in terms,
I wonder if it would change it, and then you'd not get like this mixed data set.
I'm not sure, actually. I did think about it. So saying,
like if they also ask that my measurement statistics independent of the measurement that say for working.
Yeah, and maybe looking more at like kind of conditional states and things like this. So we did look at conditional states, but I can't exactly remember, for the purification, how we did it. Because in a sense, the purification is kind of the unit effect on Bob's side is all that matters. But we didn't look at it in that case. So maybe if you consider conditional states. I need to think about it. Okay. Now I just want to talk about limitations of these alternative, as theories, the things I've presented to you are just bipartite systems, okay? So I've said, okay, we've got single systems, there's this nice hierarchy, we can consider bipartite systems, they all violate purification. And initially, so all this I have to say is work done with Luis or, from conversations with him. Initially, we kind of stopped at bipartite systems because in GPTs often that's all you worry about. Then we realized that, first, for the purpose of this talk, if you want to describe interesting, explicit preparation procedures or interesting Fraunhofer-Renner type scenarios, you definitely need more than two systems. Okay, you have Wigner, the friend, the apparatus, the coin, the system. Okay, so you need multipartite systems. The theories in this talk work for bipartite systems. And currently, we think that all the alternatives are non-associative, which is a pretty big, pretty important thing you'd want from your theory. Okay. So there might be even a more fundamental problem than lacking purification. This is still work in progress, and we're still trying to phrase it in a correct manner. Okay, so just some thoughts, as there's quite a few GPT people in the audience. There's interesting Kieran Lee and John Selby result, showing that more or less, if you want your post-quantum theory to decohere to quantum theory, it has to violate purification. This seems to say that, okay, if we want some post-quantum theory, which is also universal, it would seem quite hard to do because of the link between universality and purification. Another fact is that, obviously here I'm just looking at a specific family of theories, but purification and local tomography are definitely not generic features of non-classical systems. So local tomography requires, that the dimensions of your local subsystems multiplies the dimension of your global system. The purification, we did it from some kind of parameter counting arguments as well. Okay, so these don't seem generic at all. Moreover, at least in the approach we adopted, kind of pure state representation theory approach, associativity is not a given. Okay, and so definitely it's important to look beyond bipartite systems. Obviously, for the discussion part, it's what people want to talk about. These are just some suggestions. The crucial part of the talk was saying that the entanglement-based purification preparation is kind of a natural thing, something you'd want. I mean, maybe you've got reasons why it's not at all a natural requirement. I'm just happy for it not to be the case. One thing which I thought was quite important was to kind of identify these things, these branching theories are quite hard to think about, but by linking it to purification, we could talk about it in a general framework. And so in the case of measurement universality, is there some principle which is kind of equivalent to it, or up to some additional assumptions? Okay, and so... in this talk, the way I've suggested we think about theories is that there's some set of pure states, okay, for instance, the quantum one, some group and group action on these pure states, okay, some composition rule, and then some measurements. And when I write this and, the fact that things composed like this, they belong to this, Hilbert, raised on this Hilbert space, a tensor product. It's not at all clear from this definition that there should be this branching structure, okay? So general theory, the pure states would be some set. You know, the group action would map, you know, elements like this, okay, and you'd have some composition rule. Are there any other such structures where you can have a branching interpretation, for instance? Or is the only branching interpretation possible for this choice here? Okay, so I think this could be interesting to think about. Because if branching is specific to the quantum pure states and dynamics, it seems, you know, that from the kind of branching universality, we can already narrow down to quantum theory. Are there any other dynamical features, structures with these features? Don't really know. Okay, I think I'll conclude. So what I wanted to show is that modifying the implicit observer leads to some incompatibility with explicit descriptions of, you know, of certain preparation procedures. Okay? I hope I've outlined, you know, there are some caveats, but the kind of take-home impression is that the quantum measurement postulates are the only ones which allow for a universal theory. Okay, so it seems to be a kind of very specific feature to quantum theory and the quantum measurement postulates. So I'll just finish there. I'll say it's joint work with Luis Misanes, and yeah, thank you for your attention.
Can you go back to near the beginning when you were talking about moving from the implicit to the explicit observer, and you were talking about the next... So this is in the quantum case.
Yeah.
Move forward to the case where you're generalizing to an arbitrary probability rule where...
Yeah.
Yeah. Back one. Back. Good. So what I wanted to ask was, when you model the observer as, you know, part of the vector space, how do you derive that last line? Like, probability of I given size equal to probability of C I given size. So I presume you're still using whatever new rule you've got, F of alpha I for determining probability of I. You're not applying that same modified rule at the level of the larger vector space.
Yeah, for this specific type, yeah, it's just a function of a single coefficient. Yeah,
I'd say that. So I can see how now in that larger vector space, if I ask the question, what's the probability I should assign to this CI for system one and I for system two, the answer would come back, it's just F of alpha I.
Yeah.
But how do I figure out what's the probability of just CI alone? Maybe there's a sort of clear step.
No, here I think this is a good point, that even in the case where it's this simple modification, so for the more general modifications, I didn't write it down, so I don't know how to do it. But in the case where it's just this modification of a single coefficient, we are making an assumption. We're kind of saying that, here I haven't worked out the partial traces, and there would be actual problems because these are all signaling. The kind of notion of this partial trace, you know, tracing out the system, and just saying P of CI would actually be problematic as well.
Why would it be problematic?
So, I mean, the fact that something is signaling kind of tells you that you can't take proper reduced partial traces.
So you're saying if f were poorly chosen...
These f of a... So functions of a single coefficient are actually all signaling, so you can't do them, which is what, in the earlier talk, he was saying about they're ugly. So actually, it's true that here that I probably shouldn't have written this. There's just not even a well-defined reduced state. You can't trace out one of the systems. In this case, this is kind of... shouldn't be the case. Then in the case where you do a general modification which isn't signaling the function here, then that's what I mean by saying I don't really know how to interpret it. Well, one, because you need to take the partial traces until you just can't really read it off quite nicely.
But so let me ask this. The new prescription you're giving for how to determine the probabilities, that's meant to be applicable regardless of what the Hilbert space is.
Yeah.
I should be able to apply it to the system or the system tensor, tensor, or whatever I like.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
So that's true if it's given by a single kind of simple rule like the Born rule. Uh-huh. But in general, for instance, it might not be the case of this nice implicit definition of all the functions. So we just have some set of functions for the two subsystems. Then, you know, they somehow compose to a general system where the functions can't be written in the same nice way.
But wouldn't the kind of heuristic of your whole talk of universality suggest that we should not consider theories where, you know, the electron has one, or system one has one kind of function, and system two has a different kind of function? Like, let's say we have a bunch of qubits. Wouldn't it make sense to say, oh, if we're going to consider modifications, then it's the same modification everywhere. And a composite system is just another kind of system, and it's just
one
modification which we can describe regardless of which system we're applying it to.
Yeah, I think that would be true. Yeah, I think, as you say, that seems to be linked to the kind of branching structure that we still want to have this similar interpretation regardless of dimension. I think that would be true. Like, it would be nicer to be able to read off, as you said, things like this. Independent of the dimension, it's the same type of function which applies. I think for this purpose. So in the general case, so not for the purpose of this workshop, when you're just looking at GPTs, you don't really mind the fact, you know, that there's a single type of function which is independent of the system dimension. You could have, for instance, to know that at the system two dimension, they're all, you know, kind of squared functions. At the dimension three, it'll be cubed or something. You can make composition work. That doesn't really matter. I think for the branching interpretation, I'd say it might be more important.
So I'm asking these questions because I'm wondering if I can understand what you said in the following way. That typically, when we make the transition between treating a measurement as a kind of external intervention versus assigning a Hilbert space to the measurement device itself, in that second description, we still got an external intervention happening. It's just pushed back one step, right? So this is why von Neumann talks about it as the sort of the, where do you place the cut? And then von Neumann shows that, you know, it's consistent whether you put the cut here or you put the cut there. And there's kind of an element of that of what you're saying, but it wasn't clear to me that when you model your measurement device dynamically, that you're applying exactly the same prescription for what the probabilities of outcomes of the measurement are on that system. So am I right to think that you're talking about just the movement of a cut, or have I missed something?
This is about the movement of a cut. But I haven't shown that in the alternative theories we can consistently move the cut. So maybe it's the fact that we can't actually move the cut.
Well, that's what I would like to understand what you're saying is, you know, in these various alternative theories, unlike quantum theory, you can't move the cut. But it's not obvious that I can interpret that way because it wasn't obvious to me that you're applying one and the same set of rules for what external interventions are at the first level as you are at the second level, which to me is kind of necessary if I want to say that all of
you. Okay, I see.
Maybe what you're doing is moving a cut while simultaneously imagining that the way you model external interventions changes as you go from this being the system to that being the system. And then it's kind of a different conclusion.
Yeah, that could definitely happen because I haven't imposed any of that structure. And I think part of the reason I was saying why to think about the measurement process, for preparation, I could kind of talk about purification and make it quite a precise question. But at this level, it's not a precise question. Because you need to impose, this additional structure. And then find some property would correspond to some general property you can test. So I see what you're saying. I say I haven't imposed any of these things. So if I try and decide the cut has to be the same, maybe I need to change the form of the measurements to kind of make it work. But I'm not sure how. I'm not sure how to make this like formal and rigorous. And this part was more kind of like intuition about how it could go wrong. But I haven't fully through it. But it does seem a fundamental feature of quantum theory, this kind of freedom to put the cut where you want, for instance. Which is not clear operationally why it should be the case if quantum theory is just about preparations and things like that. Operationally, when you start in the GPTs, you have all you're describing are some preparation boxes and some measurement boxes and some correlations between them. And then we have this theory where you can kind of step outside the lab and describe the whole lab with the same type of thing we're using to describe inputs and outputs of boxes and still have this kind of consistency about where the cut is. I also realized something else I said, which I said, you know, there's kind of consistency between implicit and explicit observer. I think, yeah, I guess maybe some people would argue that the whole fact of the measurement problem would say that it's the exact opposite. We have this kind of contradiction. So I don't know what people's thoughts are about that. Like, I see them as working quite well together, exactly for the reason you can put the cut where you want. You can describe things, you know, huge entangled evolutions, and then just trace out and get what you expect. But yeah, it'll serve you maybe more philosophical where it's not consistent.
The inconsistency applies to some interpretations, like your standard textbook interpretation, kind of resists being modeled in this way. Yeah. But more sophisticated interpretations can preserve that consistency.
Okay.
So, yeah, there are some people, for example, David Wallace, who think that actually all probabilistic rules can be derived from the structure of pure quantum theory.
Mm.
So can your result say anything in this respect? Because it seems that basically you're keeping the same structure of pure states, but still there are several, let's say, options for the probabilistic rule to be available. But I think that probably this universality can make a difference, because, of course, in the spirit of the many-world interpretation, you need this sort of universality. It seems that...
Yeah. So I'd say, for instance, so the first statement you could make is like purification or maybe universality allows you to derive the quantum measurement postulates, which, yeah, in a sense, they're the only one which have these properties. That's true. But I think one thing to be careful about is we're assuming kind of operationalism. So we're already assuming there are, you know, probabilities in the classical world. And I think some people in many worlds want to somehow, you know, derive the probabilities and stuff just from kind of pure states and like invariance or symmetry principles and things like that. So I think if you're happy to be a kind of an operationalist and a many worlds person and ask, yeah, where the measurement's from, then you can derive them from like local tomography or purification. But then, yeah, the question is the people who kind of prone many worlds might not want to have this.
The probabilistic rules in the first place.
Which, yeah, actually, I didn't explore in this talk, but yeah, because I'm all the results I talk about classifying theories and purification, we're making big, like, operational assumptions, which maybe, you know, if you're just interested in branching and, you know, what consistent probability rules there are, you might not want to make.
I was wondering, when you go from one system to multiple systems, you said there are more conditions for multiple systems. Was it clear, do those alone rule out any of the descriptions for single systems?
We have one toy model where the single system is interesting, and it's not a sub-theory of quantum theory. You have interesting effects, you know, which aren't just quantum effects. But then, when we tried to make it composed, we had to get rid of all the interesting features to the extent that it became a kind of noisy sub-theory of quantum mechanics. Because, yeah, when you look at composition, obviously, for every, you know, effectively local systems, you need a joint one on the global one. You need the fact that conditional states have to, you know, be within the convex hull, have to be valid states. You need to be able to consider taking an ancilla and doing a global measurement as being also a valid measurement on the single system. So it's all these conditions, which, yeah, in the single toy model we looked at, made it, uninteresting. So kind of single systems are all interesting non-classical state spaces. But yeah, composing them together is quite hard. And, yeah, we need to restrict the effects in our experience to make it work. What I didn't say in this talk, so... the bipartite systems, they'll violate local tomography and purification. That's kind of using, as I said, they're kind of very kind of abstract general things, and it's kind of conditional on the ones that compose. So we haven't shown that all alternative Born rules, you know, this one for three-dimensional Hilbert space and three-dimensional Hilbert space composed to this nine-dimensional one. Okay, so we've got a signed toy theory which works to show that, you know, it can work, but yeah, it's not clear that all the state spaces I'm talking about compose. And yeah, so exactly choosing which ones should compose together is not obvious, you know. Just because these look like they have some kind of power three law and power three law doesn't immediately mean that you should compose something to this. So in the case we in the toy model we do, yeah, they all have this same probability rule.
So your conclusions continue to hold if you worked in a broader framework. So supposing you started by presuming that the structure dynamics was given by the unitary group, or more precisely like the projective yeah. representation of the unitary group, but you didn't presume that it's the manifold of pure quantum states, which is some GPT.
Yeah.
It felt like if you made some assumptions about how systems are going to compose, your main argument relied on a kind of parameter counting about mixed states.
Yeah.
I wonder if that
would
might apply more generally.
Yeah, so the purification argument, I think, would apply more generally, as long as you can parameterize the global pure states and compare that to the dimension of the local states, that would generalize. I think same as the local tomography rule, proof just relies on some representation theory. And so yeah, that generalizes to transitive GPTs. So the kind of proofs that apply for these dynamical structures do generalize. I'm pretty sure the purification would generalize because it's just a statement about equivalence classes of global pure states, the dimension, how many parameters you need to talk about them versus the parameters of the mixed states locally.
But what you would have to assume something about how systems compose in this GPT.
Yeah.
Because you're not in quantum theory, so it's not necessarily the usual.
Yeah, exactly.
Product.
Yeah.
You say you think that they'll generalize, but what do you have in mind for the composition rule?
Exactly. So it's if we have a composition rule, then we'd be able to apply it and see whether it violates purification. And so yeah, that's the hard thing. So once again, for single systems, you're just talking about a set, a group action on the set, and then a representation of the group as corresponds to the measurement postulates that you can do. And the hard bit is at the pure state level, what is the composition rule? So for instance, there's a paper on quartic quantum theory by Zukowski, and he shows this quite natural way to compose these quartic systems. Seems it should make sense, but it just doesn't work. So there's some ideas which at the pure state level seems, you know, oh, this is how they should compose. And then when you look at it, it doesn't. So yeah, that's the question is, yeah, how to compose. If you've got pure states XA and XB, what should be the rule to combine two pure states into the manifold? Because yeah, for single systems, I think that's the strength of like the convex approach is single systems, you can do lots of interesting stuff. And then when you try and put them together, it becomes harder.
What happens in your turmoil with this purification and the quantum
model? The toy model does have a feature that every mixed state has a pure state that reduces to it, so it satisfies the purificated constant.
Okay.
Yeah, it has a little bit more.
What's the composition?
Yeah, to answer your question about specific sets of pure states which aren't quantum, if you take C4, and you can, so the quantum case is you consider all the rays, so all the one-dimensional subspaces, this set of them. If you take the set of all two-dimensional subspaces of C4, this will give you a manifold. You can do it on this side as well. And you can kind of persuade yourself that it would be natural for them to compose to the set of all four-dimensional subspaces of C16. But yeah, so far I haven't found a case, you know, for which it composes, which is a kind of tension. So yeah, first you need to find some case which composes, and only then afterwards can you do the parameter counting and do the purification proof. And yeah, that's the hard bit, really.
I think it's time for coffee, so thank you again.
Thank you.